A few words on the practice, actually probably several. So maybe I'll talk about a possible arc of practice, how it might unfold for some of us, maybe. Or you might recognize pieces of what I'm going to be describing. It might, you might recognize something, or it might also serve as a, it's always this mapping of what's happening, you know, but also it could be received definitely at different points as instructions about practice. So something between all of this. Inspiration, contextualization, personal experience about practice, what I've recognized as a, it's an amazing privilege and role to be a teacher. We mentioned this with Heather, that we actually have the chance on this retreat, for example, every morning to spend a few hours hearing practitioners describe the unfolding of their retreat. It's quite amazing. So there's patterns that we see of how it's unfolding, things that are extremely personal. The way they're told, what's happening for me is this, extremely personal. Yet, it fits the pattern of the human unfolding in this practice, anyway. So when we come either on retreat or to practice, I think it's been the case for me, and I've seen it in many other practitioners, is we come from a world of ideas about things, assumptions about how things should be, or who I am or should be. And so we're, in a way, we live in a bit of a conceptual world, in ideas about things, ideas about the past, the future, things like this. And the instructions we receive is to pay attention again and again to what is actually happening. Pay attention and feel, sense things. And in this way, we start to become sensitive. I've used that expression a lot since the beginning of the retreat. Sensitive to what is really happening. One teacher, Christopher Titmus, puts it, I remember hearing him say that he would talk about re-actualizing memory. He would say, pay attention, because your superficial attention is just seeing a tree. It saw one when it was 2 years old, and somebody said, this is a tree. And it was conceptualized, you know? So now it's like, this is a tree, this is my husband, this is my, this, you know, and there's no, it's not the real version, it's an old version. So what we're doing here as we sit and walk and taste is we are at least having fresher imprints about that thing, yeah? So it's not like, I love blueberries, I just love blueberries, that's how it is. It's like, yeah, and you have the chance here to have a new version of blueberry. Apart from the idea that got fixed, you know, in 73. You know, and then you might, and people describe this, they say, oh my God, you know, surprised at how it actually tastes. Apart from the idea of it. And so the other day at the end of the retreat, I think I invited people to write little haikus, little short little poems that describe one moment of something during the retreat, you know? And somebody said, wrote, what was it about? I think it was about dry figs, you know? And just saying, dry figs, I know, I hate. And but after, there was another line, I'm not respecting the form of the haiku, but it was something like this. Dry figs, I know, I hate. All the figs I missed. Because in the retreat, at some point, they stopped and tasted, and my idea of it and the experience of it are two things, you know? So we're paying attention here to have a newer version of sitting. You know, sitting. Been sitting for decades. You know, I sit to eat, I sit to talk, I sit to drink coffee. What are you telling me to pay attention to sitting? Yeah, have a new version of it, like you've never sat before or heard before. And I think Eugene Cash described something like this, sitting with, I think it was his daughter, maybe, I can't remember her name. Let's say her name is Eva. Eva. Tonight. So they would sit together. He said, he would say something like this, like once a year, they would sit together on the sofa, and she would say to him, I am not Eva. And you would say, I am not Eugene. Kind of to, do you see a little bit? Like, or maybe she would say, you know, I am, or you would say, I am not your father. So she could actually like reach further than the idea to the person there, you know? So when he told that story, I was teaching on a month-long at Spirit Rock, and the teacher's office has windows, and you see the people coming to the sitting. And so in the morning, I would be there, and I would see a Carol Wilson, one teacher, come to arrive for the day of teaching. And so while she was walking, I would see her, and I would think, you are not Carol. And then she would enter in the room, and there was a little added value, you know, like, who is it then? You know, otherwise I know Carol, you know, she's fun, she's aversive, she's clever, she's quick, you know, and I know her, you know. But there's something a little violent also I find in that, if I can use that word. Do you see what I mean? If I said, you're not Carol, then she would come in and oh, who are you? How are you today? Things might have happened since my idea formed about you, you know? So here we have fresher versions of reality. We get to become really specific. The specific characteristics of things start to stand out, of distaste, of this, melon, now, you know? And the step now, or this breath, this one, only one in the whole story of the universe like this one. So getting really close, intimate, specific. And this has richness to it. People only this will say, wow, I feel I'm alive again. You know, people will describe taste of rice. Oh my God, rice tastes. It's not just a support for something else. You know? And in this way, the taste and the texture and the flavor of the different mind states, moods, emotions, quiet, contented calm, flat calm, bored calm, you know, the different and the fluctuation. So we get, very, very specific. And in that, there is what I talked about 2 days ago, kusala akusala. We get to taste the specific taste of what is liberating, onward leading, helpful, expansive. And we get to taste also what is restrictive, oppressing, debilitating in some ways. Yeah? And so that's why we pay attention. So we get the specific characteristics of different phenomena, the specific characteristics of owls conversing tonight, now, in this moment. You know, and then the mind will go, owls, I love owls. You know? But we know, we're clarifying for us, yes, thank you for this emitting that truth. And let's go back to the experience of it. And so we leave the thing, made up thing, concept, image, conclusion behind, on the side, and we go back to what is as vibrancy, what is resonating, what is truly happening, the experience. And we learn how to be with it, that experience. Now it's the experience of, I'm describing a pleasant experience. You know, and I'll see the specific qualities of my mind hanging on to it. Oh my God, when I tell people, there was, you know, there was owls right there. You know, we see the quality, we feel the quality of the mind. Oh yes, that's an unwise way. Because when I'm having my ideas about owls, owls are gone. You know, they're not accessible. There's a veil, you know, that's been put. It's the description, it's the ideas. And so in our paying attention, we discover this. Oh, that's how to live with that, is to actually abandon the ideas about it, to gain access to the thing itself, to the event, the experience itself. In the same way, when it's painful, it's also standing out. Huh? That's why here it becomes epic often. You know, you're just sitting on the cushion or on the chair and it's epic because we feel stuff. So becoming really specific about experience, coming closer. And in that movement, we're clarifying how to be with things, you know, how reactivity, you know, something unpleasant met with reactivity will multiply the stress or distress. And we'll find for ourselves specifically in experience that this unpleasant thing met with something, compassion, tenderness, if it's available, balance, stability, if it's available, curiosity, if it's available, we'll see, oh, it's a different experience, different experience. It becomes really, we're clarifying things. Tanisara Ambrosia, Tanisara Gloria Ambrosia, I remember her describing going to the dentist. But, you know, with practice in some way. So I think she's describing, so there's me, there's the me and the dentist. Me, the dentist against me. You know, how it's perceived. And then there's the drilling. And it's unpleasant and I don't want and etc. And the practice kind of kicking in a little further, like what is actually happening? you know, and she describes the mine suddenly being really interested by drilling. And she described that the feeling tone of unpleasant was not accessible anymore. It was just like pure earth element trembling, you know, and probably being surprised that she couldn't tell anymore. Is it unpleasant? I can't tell. It's the same drilling that was really unpleasant a few seconds ago, but the quality of the mind, the neutrality, the stability, the equilibrium changes the equation. The whole thing doesn't appear as unpleasant anymore as much. It's just exactly as it is. It's, you know, and I like when us retreatants, practitioners, we describe this. And I hear this of Pascal, usually I would say it was unpleasant. The only thing I can't say it was exactly unpleasant. My mind was so attentive. It was just, it was intense. And so it's another kind of neutrality, not the neutrality of being flat, of the thing being bland or beige. It's the neutrality that is provided by a really stable mind. So interesting that the mind can... So I bet Tanisara, Gloria, Ambrosia learned about how to live in that moment. Oh, there's a way to live where instead of staying at the level of my ideas, the dentist against me, by coming closer and bringing curiosity, maybe something else will be revealed that was unseen before him, you know? So anyway, these kinds of discoveries that one can make when we're getting specific and coming closer to experience. So, okay, so specific characteristic. So some phenomena are heard, some are tasted, some things are yellow, other blue, and it becomes vibrant, huh? Like this. Ah, the night at this time. So every phenomena has specific characteristics, and we come closer to that. And by staying there and keeping noticing, what will start to show up also is the universal characteristics of phenomena. Some are pleasant, some are unpleasant, some are subtle, others are more gross. But if we keep at it, will be revealed what they do have in common. It's an open secret. If you've read any Dharma book, even the back cover is enough. What will be discovered? If we come closer, what will be discovered, especially if we follow the instruction of the Buddha, we'll discover that every phenomena, anyone, will have the characteristic of being ephemeral. It will appear, and at some point it will disappear. Like, for example, this retreat. You might have the superficial assumption that it's never going to end. If you stay attentive, you'll notice at some point that it will end. If you're not attentive, you won't know, because you'll just be home doing something. You know, you won't have been attentive to the endings. You'll just, you know, move on to the next thing, as somebody was describing very insightfully. Oh, I'm noticing that I'm missing the endings, because I hear a plane appear, or the sound of a plane, and then I move to something else. you know, I actually don't notice the endings. And so here we're invited to slow down and pay attention. Anything that the Buddha talks about, a sound, a sensation, an emotion, a thought, the instructions are always see the arising of this, see the passing of this event, not thing. If the other instructions are notice the presence, notice the absence. Really skillful way to practice. So, you know, if you're sitting here at some point and you get discouraged, I think maybe just people on this side gets discouraged, not the people on this side. Is my reading right? So, if discouragement comes, you're experiencing that. Often we'll notice it's there, but we won't notice its absence later. And so that's one thing we can do, say, oh, earlier I was really awake when it felt like hopeless, it's never gonna work. But now it's not in the field, it's absent. It's good to notice this, the presence, the absence. So we do want to expose ourselves to the ephemeral nature of experience. Even if I come back to the what we call retreat, we'll see that it's flickering also. We can really much be there and not be on retreat, you know, be home doing something, like retreat is gone. Like either the location is gone or the intention of retreat is gone, you know. Everything can be gone for a few seconds of retreat and then retreats reappeared. Oh yeah, sitting here in the hall, you know. I was not actually truly having this conversation or something, yeah. Can I rewind a little bit? Can that be? I have the microphone, so. I want to come back to specific, just to name a little thing that can be extremely, that I find so useful in the thing about the specificity, the specific characteristics of things. So one of the ways that I think we find clarity from chaos, confusion, delusion to clarity is also in the specific characteristics of things. So to be able for a human being to make the difference between you know, a thing itself and the thought of it is not that easy. Like you would think it would be really easy. But for most of us with superficial attention, I don't think that we see the difference. You know, as in Munindraji saying to Joseph and maybe others, the thoughts of your mother are not your mother. Their thoughts. Are you aware of this? On retreat, not too long ago, I must admit, I was Anushka Fernandopoulé was teaching. Some of you have sat with her, I know. She's a good friend and colleague. And so she said, she had us do this little exercise that was really revealing for me. She said, I invite you to think of your shoes or boots here, shoes. Think of your boots. They are not your boots. And I was sitting there and I was thinking, no, it's my boots. And she was saying, these are not your boots. And I was like, no, this is exactly my boots. I know where they're scratched and, you know, these are my boots. It's like, no, this is a thought. This is a mental formation. It's an event, you know, and we actually want to break this down a little bit. You know, we want to gain sanity, if that's the right word here, wisdom. We want to awake to reality as it is. And so the thought of something is not the thing. I mean, it seems so primary, but in my practice, oh my God, probably that's the most important area of confusion for me. I don't quite make the difference, you know. And so that's one way to break the solidity of things, you know, that there's a mental event happening now, and it's that thing, and then it's gone. So I don't know if you see any value in what I'm describing, but to me, I think I'm talking about complete awakening just with talking about that, you know. So the flickering nature of things is revealed when we make the difference between the experience of the sound of owls, and then later sitting here, the thoughts of owls are different events. If I'm not looking really well, not attentive, I think it's the same thing. Oh, the owls, you know. This is a different event. There's an event happening here now. The other has gone. If I don't notice this, I'm not close to the ephemerality of things. Do you see? So I want to know, this event is gone. Now there's a production of an image here. This is another event. It's not the same event. I'm a little almost ashamed to say this because it seems so primary. I can imagine you would be sitting there and thinking, yeah, of course. But no, I think it's worth spending a few minutes on this. Let's go to another one, a little bit more tricky. So there was somebody sent me a website, it's in French, and a page of a website, and there's a few people talking about from different fields of science and things, talking about consciousness. It was coming from a museum where there was an exhibit around consciousness. And so there was a few views on consciousness that I could listen to on the internet. And so there was a botanist, somebody who works with plants. And the botanist was saying, and this is maybe Eurocentric view of the plant world, but the botanist was saying plants have consciousness of their environments, but they don't have consciousness of themselves. And so that's why the roots are always going, following gravity, because it feels gravity. The flowers looking for the sun. You know, some bear their fruits in the shade where it's a little bit more damp. So it really feels its environment really well, but it doesn't know itself. Hearing that, I thought, my God, that's the opposite of human beings. Human beings are really aware of themselves, not very much of the environment, often. Sorry to say, with all the horror that implies. And then after there was a biologist talking about monkeys, a particular kind of monkeys. And this person was saying, we know that the monkey, that kind of monkey, is able to make a representation of itself, like have an image of itself in its mind. Because what we observe, for example, is you see the little monkey going around and will grab a little rock like this. Then we'll walk around, grab some nuts, and then find a bigger rock and put the nut on and knock like this and release the nut and eat. And so they say, in this way we can know that there was a representation. There was a kind of a sign, like seeing itself grabbing a rock. There was a plan made. I'll grab a big rock, I'll grab it, and then I'll make a lunch for myself. And so it's a representation. It's an imagery. It's useful. It looks like a thing, but it's just a representation, and it's useful. And so the sense I got from that is that, oh, human beings do the same, But then they believe in the representation. Do you see what I mean? Like, so I'll send myself back home, talking to my friends about my trip, and then I believe this, and I start worrying about the representation. Is the representation going to be heard? And is the representation going to be, how are they going to age the representation? Do you see what I mean? And so we can spend a lot of time, like, fascinated by the representation. It's not the thing. It's not the, or the event, or the thing that, or not thing, verb, the experience. In that little thing about consciousness, Charles Genoux, who's a teacher in this tradition, was saying, consciousness is experiential. It's what reveals what is sensitive to, you know, tastes and moods for human beings. You know, the consciousness can reveal many different things, thoughts and sight. But you can't actually, it's not a thing. It's an activity, it's an experience, as Heather was describing yesterday. But we conceptualize it. We make a moi. It's useful to prepare lunch. I'll grab a rock, grab some nuts, you know. But for us, we get stuck with the thing. We believe in the thing. We worry for the thing. When there's an experience happening here, it's tricky. I don't know if I'm managing to do this well. But the representation is not it. It's not, it's just a generation of the mind. It's a creation that has its usefulness, but very, very limited. It's just a little tool. The Buddha, about this, was saying, somebody was saying, but you say I when you talk, you say, you use that I, so almost saying, so you represent yourself, you know, saying later I'll go for alms rounds, you know. You project yourself, you represent yourself, don't you? I'm adding these words because the question in the text is, do you say I? And the Buddha says, I say I, but I know the limit of this language. I'll meet you later over there. It's just a representation. There's a live experience here. The representation is not it. I cannot, like, keep thinking about the representation. And what does it come with? It comes with fear of death, of what's going to happen with it. It comes with being fascinated by its past. We represent it in the past, and we're focused on this. Joseph, I keep returning to him because I've been exposed to to him a lot in silence, to his words. So for a while, he had created the little character, Wasam will be. I was, I am, I will be. So he was thinking, every time I think I was, I am, I will be, I'll make this little character, Wasam will be. To bring a little humor, maybe tenderness, something like this, not to fall prey or be fooled, duped by the representation. The representation is not it. The experience is here. It's happening now. It can only be felt, revealed things. Yeah? So he said he would do this. Every time he would think, I am going to representation. That's only an image. It's a creation of, it's a generation of the mind. Let's be careful here, because we could follow it and believe in it and etc. And what's actually happening? Oh. There's breathing here, there's sight, there's hearing, sensitivity to vibration. This is alive, this is happening. The rest is imagery. Ah, far out. So, and this imagery is ephemeral. And it attaches itself to many things. And it's a little bit like, almost like if you, I think of a monkey that attaches itself, you know, like it jumps on one rope, and then it jumps on another rope, and it leaves the thing, the things behind, they disappear, but we don't notice because we're like, this is me now, this is me now. And so see if you recognize this. In one Walt Disney movie, there's a little character, a little, it's a Tarzan movie, but animated, and there's a little animal, it goes everywhere, and like, this is mine. Every time he sees a little stick on the ground, this is my stick, this is my stick. And then he goes around, he's walking, this is my stick, this is my stick, this is my stick, my stick. And he's totally neurotic. And the whole movie, the only thing that little animal does is that everything it sees, it says it's his. It's his. I'm not implying anything here. And so, you know, and so we're sitting here and suddenly the knee starts to hurt. My knee, it's my knee hurting, my knee. And then, I don't know, somebody opens the door like, oh, they break my concentration, you know. And then, you know, you have an opinion about something, you know, so it's my opinion, you know. And like, we keep owning or identifying or defining ourselves in all kinds of weird ways. There's events happening that kind of come and go, but we don't notice. We just define ourselves by it, you know? And so, you know, one moment, I want to be back home now, you know, because there's a desire to be back home that arises. I want to be back home now. And, I don't know, 20 minutes later, I want that recipe. And we are born in that thing. We start owning, appropriating something, identifying, and we go like this, like, and unlooked, the Buddha used the image of the magic show of I. Just little clingings, a particular kind of clinging called identification, defining oneself, fusing with. And then I define myself by an emotion. I'm angry now. It's me. I'm angry. And then, oh, I'm so forgiving. Always been very forgiving. You know? And it just keeps going. And we attach like this to things. Pleasantness, which is presented, maybe could be represented more as a river that flows in its own terms. Have you experienced it in meditation? So as we sit, we clarify this. This is another of the characteristics. So things are ephemeral, and things are not exactly mine. Opinions do arise. Emotions do arise. Hearing does happen. Knowing does happen. Sensations are felt. But in practice, if we pay attention, we'll start to notice, oh, it's not exactly me or mine, but it's definitely there. And so that's one of the things that in the arc of practice, over the retreat, maybe over a long period of practice, we start to notice. And the way it happens is, you know, we go from the concept of hand, my hand, my hand, my stick, my hand. Then we sit a little bit and there's a deconstruction happening. Suddenly it's not so much my hand and the image of it, it's tingling or touch or lightness or hardness or heat or cold. It'll be different things at different moments. And we start to notice the river-like quality of hands. Oh my God, my hand was a stopped, solid thing. And upon looking, feeling, it's river-like, experience-like nature is revealed. Can I actually own the tingling? Good luck. You know, because you feel it, it's gone. There's maybe more of the something similar, but that moment of tingling, gone. Oh, so it's not exactly a solid body. It's actually alive. It's constantly gone and new. It's a river. For the body, the Buddha used the image of foam by the side of the water. You know how it changes? Inviting us to pay really close attention and to see how the experience of body is constantly alive and dynamic and changing. Our idea is solid and it's mine. And the more we pay attention, the universal characteristics of that phenomena called that we call body will become so many bodies. So alive, expanding, contracting, heavy, light, vertical, horizontal. There's no limit. And so we'll start to recognize intuitively inside Vipassana, oh, there was a mistaken view. I thought it was mine. It came with fear of what's going to happen to what is mine. It came with feeling separated. I'm here, there's the rest of the world. And now I'm noticing that this is the world, alive, living. This is made by the world, is sustained by the world, is the world of elements. It's earth and fire and water. And then it's harder to totally own. Then we can release it, in a way, from our misunderstanding. It was always released, but there was a mental event called clinging, identifying, appropriating, colonizing, something that belongs to nature. And then maybe in practice we'll see the same thing with emotions. I thought they were mine, but now I notice that fear is present. There is fear. In the same way that there is a sound passing through, or there is cold, there is fear. Maybe it's not exactly moi, huh? But it's definitely there. And we'll notice that there is thoughts. Before I thought, I'm thinking too much, I keep thinking, and I was like, thoughts are landing in there, passing through. They're not exactly me, or at least some of them are not. They belong to associations. They follow the sound that just arose. They're more linked to the sound that just arose than to exactly me. Do you see what I mean? It comments on the sound. Maybe it belongs to the sound. Or at least we're going to question this a bit. Or maybe it belonged to, I don't know what, education, past experience, more than to a certain me. Look at that. Ah, this one belongs to gender. That's a gender conditioned thought. No, not on Samish Island. And so the more we pay attention, the more we say, oh, obsession kind of belongs to itself. You know, it does itself. And so, not easy. What I'm talking about is counterintuitive. It goes against the impressions we have, the sense we have, the beliefs we have. You know, there's a sense of me in the middle of this. There's an impression of me. There's a belief. There's a conception of me. There's like everything has turned around this. And now we sit here and we pay attention and we notice that pleasure arises and disappears. If that was mine, how it would, then it would be mine. If something is mine, then it's mine, it's mine. And no, it doesn't work like this, apparently. The more I look, the more things are not so mine. Health, if it's mine, if it's perceived as mine, it's going to hurt at some point. It certainly did to me. I was mistaken. I thought health was mine. And then one day, it was not there. Or if I thought that's also something I keep working with. I think youth is mine. And so suddenly I'm humiliated by a mirror. And so the more we pay attention, the more we might end up discovering that nothing is absolutely mine. It belongs to the tapestry, to the matrix. It's part of it. I might have felt I was separated, but maybe this is what was called delusion. And here we're coming to clarify this a little bit. So for sure it's going to need a lot of high quality attention to go underneath the assumptions about such things. Is not going to be that easy. So it makes me laugh to think that, you know, when we're born, check this out, see if you recognize something in there. So when we're born, this is what I'm told, it seems to make sense. We're undifferentiated, kind of, like, you know, and if the work is well done, somebody will tell us, you know, this, you know, what is Pascal's nose? No, this is the parent's nose. Where is Pascal's nose? This is Pascal's nose, you know. And so suddenly I start to know, oh, yeah, okay, this is me, this is, you know. And then I'll go like this, you know, and they'll say, no, honey pie, this is Heather's glass. No, mine. No, unfortunately, it is Heather's glass, you know. So I'm defining mine, not mine. So I go from pre-egoic. Would that be the expression? Pre-egotic, egoic, pre-egoic. And then I enter the stage of egoic, you know. Hopefully it's going to be well done, so I have a good sense of self, you know, boundaries, really good. And then I come to a retreat. And then we say, honey pie, this two is not yours. It is a hand. It's not yours. It belongs to nature. It's not your agitation. It's agitation. It does happen in universe. It belongs to the universe, you know? You know. And yes, this, it's benevolence. It's beautiful benevolence. Not yours. It's benevolence. You can recognize it. Don't define yourself by it. I'm so benevolent. Always been. So kind. You know, no, honey, that's delusion. There is kindness. And watch out, it's going to be flickering. So we come here and we start to question, is that mine or not mine exactly? And the Buddha has four, he says there's only four ways that we make the mistake. Oh, time is up. So he says, there's just four ways that you'll be mistaken. You'll either think, this is me, or you'll think, this is mine. Or you'll think, this is in me. Or you'll think, I'm in it. Take any phenomena and check it out. If there is appropriation, identification, just check it out how it feels. Ah, it's the body, it's me, or I'm in it, or there's an emotion, it's mine, or it's in me. Do you see? And so anything, pleasure, it's my pleasure. Or it was in me, the pleasure. And that's the little monkey that jumps from one. Suddenly it's me, the other one is mine, the other next thing happening, I'm in it. And I keep attaching, clinging like this. And the illusion of me at the center of the world and what's going to happen to me and what do people think of me and me projection and me, all this, a mess. Huh? And so we sit here, we quiet the mind, and we start noticing how suddenly it defines itself momentarily in a way, and then momentarily in another way. You know, you go back to your, you get your plate, you go sit at that famous table. You put your plate there, your lump. You go get your tea, and when you come back, somebody is eating in your food. Mine, you know, my plate. And, you know, despair, rage, confusion, you know. And imagine that didn't happen. You come back with your tea, you sit at your table having your meal, and then you finish your meal, you put your plate there, and then you decide to go for a walk there by the lake, and I'm coming with an empty plate like this. Hey, your plate. Yeah, this is not my plate. This is a plate. Huh? It's good. Over this, there's clarity. Huh? It was momentary owning, conventional. But for the rest, do we have that much clarity? You know, that it's just for a little while. It was not belonging to any moi. So I'll finish just by naming two places, two kind of like ultimate, almost, hideouts for I. Like where you'll be like, okay, but there's two things I don't want you to touch, Pascal. I'm ready to give up emotions, they pass by, okay. Hearing, is something happening, it's going to end, not mine, okay. Sensations, I agree. Thoughts, okay, I see, they pass by, they comment on things, you know, they depend on other things. But intentions, do not touch that. It's me who decides to stand up when I stand up. It's me who comes back to do the sitting or goes to do the walking or doesn't. This is really me or mine. How do you feel about this? Are you ready to let that one go? No way. So, yeah, I find it interesting when we ring the bell that suddenly we all pretty much have the idea of opening our eyes. You know, although it's me who opens my eyes, it's interesting that it happens at that time. I wonder if it couldn't be called conditioned. You know? Or, yeah, what makes you go back to your room or go walking? Like, what? Is it really you who decides? Or it's a mood? Or, you know, or where you'll be walking. What decides that? In retreat, when we get quiet, it's really interesting to see this. How things are so conditional. Oh, I'll go this way. Is it probably a lot of the time it's looking for some kind of pleasure or it might be, oh, I'll go this way, it'll be quieter. There's something that decides. you know, like just I was walking here earlier for just a few moments in the break, and it was really interesting to me to notice that I had the intention to stop always when I was about to hit the wall. Suddenly the intention to stop would arise. I find it very revealing how it belongs to conditions, you know? So my intention to talk or not to talk in a conversation, it's often I find that it's led not by moi as much as by mind states. So I love coming on retreat and doing this practice of mindfulness, because what it reveals to me is what mind state is present. And if it's a akusala, not so helpful mind state, maybe there'll be the capacity to invite wisdom. So wisdom or kindness or honesty will drive the thinking process or the actions or the... So intentions. Like, there's many places here where you can check it out, you know? When you get your plate, where are you going to go sit? It's interesting to watch. What is going to... Something's going to make the decision. Something. It's not to judge in any way. It's just to notice. Discomfort will probably have the idea to readjust the posture. And the last thing would be the last of the last, don't touch. My identification, this is really me, or in me, or I'm in it, or etc., is the consciousness itself, that factor of mine, what we often talk about, the observer or the witness. This is me. This is often will be the last hideout of identification. I am the one watching the show. Or feeling, the feelings come and go, the thoughts come and go, but I am noticing them. We need a few more days, I think, to explore that. And so that activity of mind, that event of knowing, it's interesting to watch the sense that it's mine, or the impression, or the perception that it's me, or mine, or happening inside of me. That is like bringing the question as far as one can. It's remarkable that the Buddha went that far. Said, I even checked that out for you. And why does he talk about this? Apparently, it's because of suffering and the end of suffering. Like, it's not an intellectual trip, you know, like, let's trip about I and consciousness. And it's not that. It's the fear, the isolation that comes with it. I am this little consciousness in a vast universe, separate from it. I'm freaking out because what's going to happen to me at death? You know, if that's the end, I'm freaking out. If it continues, I'm freaking out. Of course, you know. And there's, apparently it's just a little mistake in perception. I took as being mine something that wasn't mine, that was definitely happening, but that was not exactly mine. Tomorrow is going to be an interesting day, or confused day. Anyway, I'm thinking of a good friend, Temple talks, when he talks about this stuff, he talks about rigid and fluid self, you know, the sense of like it's me, and very rigid, and how with practice we gain some kind of fluidity in the sense of self, you know, I can take on... You know, it's more smooth. Like, yes, it's mine, and it's also not mine, you know. plays a little bit with its freeing, fluid sense of mind. So many things to say about this, but I think that's plenty. So if you're confused, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a really good thing. So you don't know who you are, what is yours or not, really good point. Then after we have to check it out, to pay really good attention and see. So I named two of the universal characteristics tonight, the ephemerality and the anatta, not absolutely mine. Let's sit for a moment. May we fully and deeply awake to the ephemeral nature of reality. May we fully awake to the not so much about me nature of reality.